Welcome to the FDD Events Podcast. I'm Cliff Mate, founder and president of FDD, and pleased to share with you the following conversation. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss out on future FDD events.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. The war in the Middle East is now 180 days old. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, Senior Vice President for Research at Foundation for Defense of Democracies. Welcome back to the FDD Morning Brief. Well, it's turning into a slugfest in the Middle East, folks. In one corner in the blue and white trunks is the IDF. In the other corner in the black turban is the IRGC, the Iranian regime's Revolutionary Guards. The IRGC is armed and trained and funded all the terrorist groups firing at Israel these days, and the IDF is firing back across the region. We never lose sight of that wider war here at the FDD Morning Brief, and that wider war starts and ends with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And speaking of Iran, our guest this morning will be Jason Brodsky. Jason is policy director at UANI, United Against Nuclear Iran. He's also a non-resident scholar at the Middle East Institute. Jason will be joining us live in just a few minutes. The Israelis made a terrible mistake this week. For reasons still unclear, but are currently still under investigation, the IDF carried out a strike that killed 7 aid workers from World Central Kitchen. The NGO, led by famed chef Jose Andres, has been delivering food to war zones for more than a decade, with UN organizations like UNRWA now exposed as terrorists and frauds. Initiatives like World Central Kitchen are vital. The headlines about Israel right now are predictable. The criticism is blistering, and deservedly so, but there's more to say. The pro-Hamas and pro-Iran echo chamber says that Israel did this intentionally. This is simply blood libel. Amidst well-documented efforts by Hamas to divert aid and food from reaching Gazans, Israel has consistently kept the aid coming in. And then there's this. For the last 6 months, our mainstream media has blamed Israel for a long list of things it didn't do. A mistake like this was the last thing that Israel needed. The incident has already complicated Israel's objectives, namely to win the war against Hamas while steering Gaza toward a more stable future. Mistakes happen in war. That's not the exception. That's the rule. The fog of war never entirely lifts on an active battlefield, and Gaza, with 2.5 million people in an area the size of Washington, D.C., is a complicated battlefield. It's even more complicated when Hamas regularly uses civilian vehicles for military purposes. The American military had its fair share of errant strikes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the lessons learned apply here. When terrible news occurs, it's a mistake to try and justify it. Acknowledging mistakes is about all a professional military can do, and then just make sure it doesn't happen again. Now for your headlines. Headline one, the Israelis struck a top Iranian military official in Syria on Monday. Mohammad Reza Zahidi was his name, and he was the top commander for the Islamic Revolutionary Guards in Lebanon and Syria. He was reportedly meeting with Shiite militias in a building next to the Iranian embassy in Damascus when he met his fate. Iran's supreme leader lashed out at Israel on Twitter yesterday. He vowed to strike back at Israel in retribution, but I have to say, such threats ring hollow to me. The Iranian regime has already armed, funded, and trained every one of the actors currently fighting Israel and the United States across the Middle East right now. What is Khamenei going to do? Order one of those proxies to fire yet another rocket or another drone at Israel? Yawn. Been there and done that for 6 months and counting. Headline two, Fitch, the financial rating company, has removed the, quote, watch negative, end quote, rating it placed on Israel. Israel has an A-plus rating, but Fitch still warns of a negative outlook given the harsh economic demands of the war. Just so we're on the same page here, this war has so far cost Israel an estimated 24.7 billion shekels. That's $6.6 billion. That covers the cost of running the war, activating the reserves, and providing social services to the population. The estimated cost through 2025 for Israel is a whopping 215 billion shekels or $58 billion. As a former economic warrior, I have to wonder, is Iran deliberately waging an economic war against Israel here? It's fair to ask. The Houthis blocking the Red Sea traffic is driving up inflation, and every Iron Dome interceptor runs somewhere around $50,000. The longer this thing drags on, the more the economic challenges will mount. Sure, I know that there are bright spots like Israel's high-tech sector, but every war has a price tag, and this one ain't cheap. Headline three, an Israeli shepherd was attacked and beaten by eight Arabs in the West Bank yesterday. I continue to watch the West Bank. It's Ramadan, and the Israelis have a huge amount of forces operating in this territory. Raids and arrests of terrorists happen every day. Tensions remain high, and as I've noted before on this program, the Iranian invention known as Al-Quds Day is this Friday. This is a day deliberately intended to spark conflict between Palestinians and Israelis. And then there's this. We've all been watching the State Department issue round after round of sanctions against violent Israeli settlers. I have not seen similar measures taken against violent Palestinian actors in the West Bank. Heck, I haven't even seen a condemnation by the State Department spokesperson. Gosh, I wonder why. I'm now pleased to introduce Jason Brodsky from United Against Nuclear Iran. Jason had to reschedule with us last week to attend the funeral of Senator Joseph Lieberman. We're thrilled he's come back today to try again, and he's a truly informative social media feed filled with the crimes of the Islamic Republic, among other things. He joins us live today on the FDD Morning Brief. Welcome, Jason Brodsky.
Thanks, Jonathan. It's great to be with you.
Great to have you. Okay, let's start with last week. I understand that you and Senator Lieberman were close. If you would, just tell us a little bit about your relationship.
Sure. Senator Lieberman was the chairman of United Against Nuclear Iran, my organization, and I had the high honor of being able to work very closely with him. I traveled with him. I wrote for him. He was, as we say, a true mensch. There were really and continue to be too few people like him in American politics. He cared about the person behind the position, from staff member to world leader. And I think that that is reflective of his character, especially on the staff level. He was a mentor. He liked to nurture people's professional growth. So I'm going to miss him terribly.
Well, I'm deeply sorry for your loss. And I have to say, he was a great American. We will all miss him. Let's turn to the current headlines. I want to talk to you about Israel's strike that killed Mohammad Reza Zahidi in Syria. He was the most senior IRGC figure to be killed by Israel since this war began. In your estimation, what are the implications and what do you think the likely Iranian response is going to be? They're threatening quite a bit. Do you think they're going to follow through?
Well, I think we have to step back and look at who Mohammad Reza Zahedi was. He was the head of Department 2000 of the Quds Force, which is in charge of operations in the Levant. He had years-long relationship and a very close one, indeed, with Hezbollah's Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah. There was a piece of reporting that came out yesterday for the first time that revealed Zahedi was actually a member of Hezbollah's Shura Council and Jihad Council. And so he had a very close touch points with Hezbollah and Syria and the militias there. And so I think his loss will be felt by the Islamic Republic. He had a lot of standing, senior standing in the system. He wasn't just a regional Quds Force commander. He was also the former head of the IRGC's ground force and air force, and was the overall IRGC operations chief for a period of time. So this is a loss of experience. It's a loss of relationships. It's a loss of networks when you take someone like him off the field. And coupled with his absence is the death of his deputy, Mohammad Hadi Haji Rahmani, who was the deputy coordinator of the IRGC's Quds Force for a period of time, the number three position in the Quds Force. And so that is taking off a considerable level of knowledge and experience and manpower and know-how from the Quds Force's Levant Operations Division. And so this will be a considerable loss for the Islamic Republic. How it will respond, I'm always reminded of something that Frank McKenzie, former head of U.S. Central Command, wrote, and he recently, and he quoted Lenin, and he said, when you probe with bayonets, when you find mush, you push, and when you find steel, you withdraw. And he said that that is how Iran really operates in the region. And so I think that, and this is a part of a history of when Iran is hit directly, it tends to, it'll retaliate, but it'll manage the escalation, and its bark is often worse than its bite. And so we've seen this over a period of successive operations that the Israel and also the United States have undertaken. In 1998, the Operation Praying Mantis, which took out half of the Islamic Republic's Navy, it contributed to the end of the Iran-Iraq War, and maritime provocation stopped. So this is part of a long trend line in that direction.
Got to say, Operation Praying Mantis sounds pretty good right now in light of what's going on in the Red Sea. Yep. But I do tend to agree. And by the way, just terrific granular stuff about some of these figures that were taken out. So thank you. We've talked a lot on this program about the Iranian proxy strategy, what we call the Ring of Fire, and the mayhem that the Islamic Republic has sparked across the Middle East. How do you assess, you watch this every day, this is your job. How do you assess the U.S. response to this direct assault on the American-led world order in the Middle East? Does the United States need to do more here to right the ship? It looks like we're losing. Would you agree?
I think you have to look at Iranian strategy as a continuum over years, over decades. They don't just deal in 4-year or 8-year increments. They invest over decades in their proxy and partner network, which is called the Axis of Resistance. They have nurtured these relationships. There are different levels of and degrees of relationships within that Axis of Resistance and network. But nevertheless, they maintain considerable influence and control, especially over the IRGC manufactured militias. And those are the ones that were responsible for the deaths of American soldiers in Jordan. And those and the Houthis, let's not forget, the IRGC has a commander, Abdul Reza Shalai, who's on the ground in Yemen directing these attacks at commercial shipping in the Red Sea. So the U.S. response has been halting, episodic, and not consistent. And I think that it has been underwhelming, really. We are holding the symptoms of the problem accountable, the Houthis, the Iraqi militias, but we are not going to the source of the problem, and that is Iran and the IRGC. And that, in my view, if you want to know one of the core weaknesses of U.S. strategy on Iran, over Republican and Democratic administrations, it has been our inability to find the right address, which is in Tehran, and as opposed to these regional proxy militias. They have never been made to feel pain, and they've rarely been made to feel pain, and unless and until you start striking at the source of the problem, you are going to continue to have the Iranian leadership form a cost-benefit analysis where the benefits of undertaking these operations outweigh the costs, which are non-existent.
Well, here's hoping we start to turn things around, that I tend to agree. I know you've been tracking the recent stabbing attack on the Iran international television journalist Pouria Zarati. If you would, tell us a little bit about this television station. I don't think we've talked about it here on the FDD Morning Brief. And then perhaps tell us a little bit about how you see the implications of this troubling attack.
Well, I think that it's important for your viewers to know that, as you know, Jonathan, the Islamic Republic engages in significant transnational repression. And it has targeted for assassination and kidnapping individuals such as Iranian dissidents and former U.S. government officials, like a former U.S. National Security Advisor, a former U.S. Secretary of State, a former Secretary of Defense, and the former head of U.S. Central Command, harm in the United States. That doesn't make the headlines every day, but this is a fact and this is a reality. And plots right now as we speak are ongoing, but they're being thwarted thanks to the heroic efforts of U.S. law enforcement. Iran International TV is is the most popular television station in Iran. It is watched by Iranians more than state TV, and it has been seen as a source of information and perspective for the Iranian people in a context where the regime tightly controls their access to information, and the regime views Iran International as a threat. And so that is why it has targeted multiple journalists who work at Iran International for harm. Sadly, Pouria Zarati, who is a friend, was stabbed last Friday outside his home in London. And the assailants fled very quickly after the attack to Heathrow Airport, and they were able to get out of the country. And so the Islamic Republic has a long history of employing criminal gangs to undertake this kind of transnational repression. And so that's the angle and the motive that investigators in the UK are likely eyeing in this case.
And just to be clear, Iran International is Saudi funded?
Well, it's funded by private donors, so that's what they say. And this is, but I think that Iran. What's important with Iran International is that the context is we have a situation where the response from the U.S. government and the U.K. have been underwhelming, in this situation. That these cases are handled as law enforcement matters, but there is no policy response. So what we'll see is a strongly worded press statement from world leaders, a few piecemeal sanctions of individuals who have no assets in the UK and elsewhere, and potentially an indictment in the case. And then the situation goes away, but there is no policy consequence that the US and the UK and its allies around Europe, and this is happening all across Europe as well, not just the UK, have imposed on. There has been no costs on a policy level for the Islamic Republic, and that has to change in order to deter these attacks.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the legalistic approach is not going to deter anything, and yeah. I've got 100% agree with you there. Last question for you before we let you go, and I got to ask you this. I mean, you've been watching Iran for a long time. That's your job. What do you think the broader Iranian strategy is? I mean, do you think they're fighting a long war against Israel and the goal is just to drag this out, make an economic war, a sort of a slow, bruising battle that goes on for months? Or is this a distraction from the nuclear progress that the regime is making? Is there a dual strategy that's being pursued in parallel? I mean, how do you unpack this?
I think it's both. I think the Iranian system, as I mentioned before, is continuing its long-term effort to encircle Israel in a ring of fire. And its intent is to make it unlivable there. And I think that it sees itself as succeeding in the displacement that's happened in the north and obviously what happened on October 7th with Gaza. So that situation is how the Iranians perceive what's happening. And so that's part of the strategy. But the second part of the strategy is they want to deflect attention from advances that they continue to make in their nuclear program. Now, that doesn't mean that they're currently going to race to enrich to 90% uranium, which is a weapons grade, but they are hardening their sights. They are developing knowledge through advanced centrifuges, and that is just expanding the contours of the program at a time when the world and the international community is distracted. So I think it's a little of both.
Tend to agree. FDD's Mark Dubowitz has been saying that for months, and Cliff May just had a terrific piece in the Washington Times talking about that as well. So I tend to agree across the board. All right, Jason Brodsky, thank you for joining us today on the FDD Morning Brief. Very much appreciate you coming live with us today.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Jonathan.
Okay, here's what FTD has on tap for you today. FTD senior analyst on emerging threats, Max Lesser, has a new co-authored memo with new forensic details about an ongoing multi-year influence operation that promotes Chinese interests on Facebook. The newly discovered operation includes over 450 pages in user profiles. This is a coordinated effort to promote anti-American and anti-Western narratives. This memo, written by Max, lays out a series of policy recommendations for the government and private sector that really need to be implemented as we head into peak election season. This memo, by the way, was written up in the New York Times and covered by Rachel Maddow. Experts from FTD's Iran program, Saeed Ghassaminejad and Behnam Bentaleblou, have analyzed the recent elections in Iran, and they've pinpointed the key players to watch in the contest in the context for succession following Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei. They note that recently elected assembly of experts will be vital in managing the transition. And like all things in the theocratic regime, this process is tightly controlled. And finally, FTD will be hosting a virtual event today to examine the recent local elections in Turkey. Sunday's vote was a rare bit of good news in the Middle East. I don't smile much. This one made me smile. President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's allies got shellacked across the entire country. So what does this mean, you ask? My colleague and recent FTD Morning Brief guest, Sinan Jidi, will be sitting down with leading political scientists, economists, and historians to discuss. So tune in today at 11 a.m. on FTD's website or watch it streaming live on X. That's a wrap for today, folks. Read our expert analysis on our website, FTD.org. Read our quick takes on X at FTD and support our work with a tax-deductible donation at FTD.org/invest. Tune in Friday for another episode of the FTD Morning Brief. I'll be joined by Roee Case, the very talented Arab Affairs correspondent for Israel's Khan 11 News. I'm a big fan of this guy, and he'll be coming to us just in time for Al-Quds Day. See you then. I'm Jonathan Shanzer, signing off for FTD.